This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Scott Reiner. Scott's the CEO of the Adventist Health System. Adventist Health is a large system with 24 hospitals, a great system, I think serving 80 different communities in 3 different states right now. Scott will tell us a lot more. Scott, can you take a moment to introduce yourself? Then I'll ask you about Adventist Health, about career, about leadership, and a lot more. Scott?
Thank you, Scott. Thanks for the invitation to join you today. Yeah, Adventist Health is, like you mentioned, it's a West Coast health system in 3 states, California, Oregon, and Washington, 24 hospitals, 80 different communities, and we have a large footprint of clinics as well. You know, it's about a $5 billion system, but probably the most important thing is who we are. Our organization is really founded on this, the principle of faith-based healthcare, and over 100 years actually worth of that work in our communities. And so we're very proud of our mission and how we get to serve those communities and in difficult communities. We're typically running at around 82% government payer. So we serve a lot of communities that are either poor or older, and, you know, in some cases, poor and old, but and a kind of a combination. You know, we have 500-bed hospitals, you know, and 25-bed critical access hospitals spread across these 3 states.
So on top of everything else, Adventist Health, that we've come to know, is also a very caring and innovative system. I mean, worked hard on different programs, different projects, different concepts, serving the underprivileged, also working on hospital to home and a number of other things. I mean, really a great system. Take a moment and, you know, talk about 3 points of pride in the system or a few points of pride that you're particularly proud of when you think about Adventist Health.
Yeah, I'd love to. Of course, every CEO is very proud of their system, right? So I would say, Scott, there are 3 things, and I'd couch it in these areas, kind of like, what do we stand for? And briefly, our mission is pretty simple. It's living God's love by inspiring health, wholeness, and hope. So if you unpack that a bit, you know, it comes out of that faith tradition, but I would say there's 3 major portions of it. And that's kind of the organization that we're becoming, and I'll share that in a second. But essentially, health, wholeness, and hope really is the destination of the work that we're doing. And I think that's where you picked up on some of the innovation work. So I'm, you know, exceptionally proud of the mission, what we stand for. The second really is, you know, let's talk about what we've been through. And every health system that you're talking to, interviewing provider system, has been through an amazing journey over this last year and a half. And I'm very proud of our organization, how they've responded clinically. We've kept on our toes, we've kept our resilience up, and we've also invented, and in some cases reinvented. We've really accelerated in our virtual digital platform. You briefly referenced Medically Home. We have stood up a hospital at home program in a period of about 7 or 8 weeks, where we're now serving in multiple communities. We've integrated our artificial intelligence work in our behavioral health work with a company called Synchronous Health, who we partner with. And so we've really accelerated that for our communities and our associate well-being. And probably the greatest pride, I think, Scott, is even during this turbulent time, we've done, I think, 2 things well. We've managed our communities and the patients, especially in, you know, the areas of COVID. But we've also stood up our 2030 strategy. And essentially what that means is we are moving from a hospital company to a health company, to a well-being company. So our thought and strategy is by 2030, we'll be known as a well-being company. And well-being would house those components that you might imagine, our hospitals, our clinics, our home care agencies. It'll also house a significant amount of value-based lives that we have today. We have over 300,000. By then, we anticipate over 1.5 million that are some form of risk. And really, the most innovative portions of that will be in our spaces of well-being, where we're working with improving access to services, social determinants of health work. We've recently acquired over the last year a company called Blue Zones, which is a longevity company, and this company will help in combination with our work on disadvantaged populations. So our strategy, Scott, is that we can face any community with interventions that are either for the disadvantaged populations and or populations who have more resources and help shape the community's footprint a little differently. And we think after, as the pandemic settles down, we think this is exactly what our communities need. We think this is what the communities will need across the country. And so our destination is a well-being company. So I'm very proud of that. I'm proud of that reinvention, if you will.
Well, no, it's a magnificent evolution that Adventist Health has had over a long period of time. And this focus on social determinants and wellness, where you're going, is fantastic. Take a moment on leadership. You've had this great leadership career. You're very well respected as a leader. You've also been involved in such things as the Baldrige Foundation. You've worked on the board of the California Health System. You've involved yourself in the community. Talk about leadership and what advice you would give to people, emerging leaders or other leaders. What are a few pieces of advice you think about when you think about leadership?
Well, maybe there's a couple, I would say. One is strategic and one is, let's call the head and the heart. I would say from a strategic perspective, I would say I've learned this early on from people who came before me, and that is start with the end in mind. Which is challenging in healthcare because it's so acute, it's right in front of us. That's the tyranny of the urgent at times. But if you can actually step back, look at industry trends, look at where consumers are wanting to space, look at the economics, and then envision something that's 5-10 years out, and then kind of work your way backward. It's not always going to be the same. It's not always going to hit, but it creates a destination, a North Star that orients the organization. And that honestly, especially that's been very helpful during this time, it's kind of a position of hope. So yeah, there's hope that there is a better spot for healthcare, a better spot for serving our communities. And so I would say start with the end in mind. It's a mindset. It takes you away from the detail right in front of it. You'll get there eventually. So have that ability to strategically think forward and then design backwards, re-engineer it.
Do you find that a different periods of your career, different periods of your year, it's easier or harder for you to do that, to sort of see what the end looks like? I mean, start with the end in mind is one of the great seven habits and concepts from Stephen Covey, one of the great thinkers and faith-based thinkers in our lifetime. Do you find that sometimes it's easier or harder to do that? Like sometimes I find it very easy to do that. And sometimes I find it very hard to think very incremental. Talk about that for a moment.
Well, I guess there's two points to that, Scott. One is have the benefit, as you probably do in your career, where I have a little bit more latitude to do some thinking. It's kind of my role as a system CEO to think strategically. I think you also have to be able to compartmentalize a bit. There's no question I'm dealing with things today that have to be solved yesterday. There's new laws, new strategic competitors, new challenges with workforce, whatever it is, right? But I think you have to be able to carve a certain amount of time and discipline time to think about that future and have your team actually go into that space with you. It's kind of a muscle memory. You have to train yourself to do that. Now, it's easier for me to say almost in the role that I'm in today, but if I was a vice president of a hospital, running a cardiac service line or something, it's a little harder, I get, because sometimes other people set the agenda. But I'll tell you, the reason I'm in my spot today is because I took that leap, 20 some years ago with one of my supervisors, if you will. And I actually boldly put in front of that person what the end could look like on a particular service. I kind of launched my career, basically, because there's not a lot of people that actually think that way and have the discipline to do it. So I think it's very helpful, beneficial, but it is easier, let's face it, at this point in my career than it may be if I was a new vice president or something taking direction.
You've done a remarkable job of it. I didn't mean it. I meant it as a true question, not as a one or the other. You've done a remarkable job of it, and the discipline to do it regularly, to try and do it regularly, And the point that you make, that it was something that set your career forward, and that most of us are so busy in the tyranny of the now, the urgent, that's hard for us to do, but so important to do it if you want to be an effective leader. So I think it's magnificent advice. And I was really just trying to dig it further. So I find it sometimes easy to do, and sometimes I find it very hard to do. And sometimes things sometimes it's easier and harder.
Yeah, sometimes, some days it's not great. Other days, you find a quiet spot. You have this rhythm you can create to try to create that. The other one I would say I learned is know when it's a head moment and when it's a heart moment. And that's in leadership too. You know, because we're in a people business, as you know, we're, you know, each, we have 30,000 associates and we have, you know, whatever, hundreds of thousands, few million of community members. And I think as a leader, I think it takes some discipline also to understand what the moment calls for. If the moment calls for something smart and brilliant and, you know, statistically correct, that's one thing. But if you can read the room and read the situation, sometimes it just takes a pause for appreciating where people are, whether you're someone you're supervising or in a community. If a community's hurting, you got to go there. And if the associates are in a tough spot, you have to be able to go there. You'll eventually get to the business, the head work. So I think, and what happens with that, people develop respect and trust. I think it's actually mostly about trust. So if you can balance the head and the heart, and you know, I tell you, it's easy for me to say. It's taken a very long time to learn how to do this. A discipline again. These are all disciplines, right? Of learning how to discern at that moment, what does the situation call for? And I would say that's another, a hard and soft skill, especially if you're going to be an innovator and push forward. You have to have trust for people to go where they can't actually see that future themselves yet.
No, I think that's a brilliant point. I never think of it really thought of that way, but it's a magnificent way to categorize it. Is it a head moment where I got to think of the most brilliant way to solve a problem, the most strategic way to solve a problem?
Yeah.
Or is it a heart moment where I have to listen and be compassionate with my people or the community or whatever it might be? And they are very different things. I mean, so many times people just want to be listened to versus told the right answer. And it's true in leadership, it's true in relationship, it's true in so many things. But I love that categorization. Is it a head or a heart moment?
Yeah.
Take a moment and talk for a moment. I mean, magnificent system, really amazing what Adventist has done over the years. And I'm familiar with the hospitals that you used to run in the Midwest, in the Hinsdale area and the Glen Oaks area and so forth. But really amazing what's happened with Adventist over the years. Maybe I'll get that. I don't have that right. But take a moment on pivotal moments in your career. In moments that made a difference in your career and maybe advice you'd give to others in terms of developing their career.
Yeah. Well, that's a good one. We all have such significant moments. Probably the first moment I had was this transition from becoming a nurse to a vice president or a leader, if you will, moving from a kind of a clinical technical bent to, well, it's called leadership. You know, you start early with supervisor, manager, director, vice president, so forth, kind of work your way up. I would say that was the most pivotal moment because it made my head hurt. You know, you had to really kind of switch from I'm on for 12 hours to I'm on 24/7. You're now accountable for not just the care of the patient. You're now accountable for the care of the business as well. And so I think that was a pretty big pivotal moment for me that really stretched me, a little, you know, stressful at times trying to make that pivot. The next one is when you're fully responsible for something, maybe as a pivot. Yeah, that would be like becoming a CEO of a hospital. You realize that you've become kind of a mayor of a city, as it is. Well, a hospital is like everything. You know, you have everything from plant operations to patient care to contracting to, you know, community-based work, the boards, the physicians, you know, so many things that you're dealing with you become kind of the mayor. And now you have to figure out in that moment, at any given moment, they kind of say you're either a prophet, priest, or a king, right? You have to figure, at any moment, you have to figure out what kind of, what's the situation called for. That was new to me. I mean, trying to figure that out, again, being right for that moment.
I think it's a fascinating point you make, though. This is a brilliance of leadership. And obviously, mistook. You were Glendale, the CEO, for the first time versus Glen Oaks, which I always think of as one of the Adventist
hospitals
in the Midwest here.
Yeah, no.
A bit fascinating. But your point on this, you make this point. Sometimes it's a head moment. Sometimes it's a heart moment. Sometimes I'm the leader and I'm giving direction. Other times I'm number two to my other leader who's leading that service line, whatever they're doing. And I'm not always, right. You know, that throughout life, particularly as a leader, you pivot in and out almost moment by moment, day by day. You're always the CEO of Adventist Health. There's moments when you're taking second place, somebody else is leading that discussion, or leading whatever you're doing on hospital home or community vaccinations, yep, or whatever it might be, that you pivot in and out of roles. And that awareness that you do that is a magnificent awareness.
You are. You're constantly pivoting. I love how you say it, second place, because, you know, honestly, I'm a big believer in servant leadership concepts, right? And there's sometimes you got to act like you're, you know, you're the person that, but most of the time, people don't want that. What they need you to do is understand them, have some courage, you know, instill them with some courage, give them a chance to make a couple mistakes here and there. But no, look, they need to know that the ship is balanced and it's pretty safe and it's going to be stable for them to take risks. And that's when you're in your second position, really. And just ask a lot of questions. I think everybody needs to know what those precious few things that you really are going to, everybody knows probably with yourself, there's going to be a few questions you're always going to ask. Well, Scott's going to ask these questions. They're going to know. So they know those are really important to you. Outside of that, I think you have to let people do their thing and lead, as long as it's kind of inside the guardrail of your position and strategy and mission. So, it's more of a back, it's a second position a lot of times. It really is. That's a good point. I hadn't thought of it quite that way.
But it's a fascinating perspective on leadership that you bring to the table. It really is. I've never heard it articulated quite as you articulate it. And I actually love how you do so. So you've had this fascinating career. I mean, we've seen more and more of this, of nurse leaders that then become leaders. I mean, you see it, Johns Hopkins, the CEO is a former nurse, Kevin Sowers. I talked today to a brilliant nurse who's now the chief of supply chain at a magnificent system. Jenny Spacio at UCLA is also a former nurse, as is Nancy Age at Brilliant Health. And a magnificent mix of people that were nurse or physician leaders that ended up being total leaders of systems. Any thoughts on that mix of great intelligence and great compassion that leads to leadership that's often is found in our nursing community?
Well, I'm biased because you listed some incredible people. I could go down the list of others. I'm biased because I think the heart of a nurse is, let's face it. If you're really leading people, you lead mostly with heart. That people remind you for your heart and for who you are than maybe the last piece of accomplishment. I think nurses do a phenomenal job. They have a very high EQ for empathy. I think they have a better opportunity to figure out, discern an audience or the human. Like, how do you connect with them to motivate them, inspire them, connect with them? I think nurses are biased. Now, I'm biased that way, but of course, they also have all the clinical understanding. You know, they know how the dots connect in the clinical platform. They have immediate credibility with the physician. And then, you know, as you probably know with your data too, right, the nurses are the most trusted profession, one of the most trusted profession, if not probably after post-COVID, most trusted profession in the country. So I think it provides great credibility. It doesn't mean we don't have to be on our toes and learn. You know, we all went back and got our MBAs and so forth. But I think in the end, you're leading a healthcare company where you're taking care of people. And they're generally around health and clinical. And I think that becomes I'm biased. I think it becomes a better platform for building trust, credibility, and leading. So that's,
it's really been an amazing transformation for me to watch over the years, the number of the top leaders in the country that happen to be nurses by background. So fascinating for me to watch from an outside perspective. I find you mentioned nurses the most trusted in business, you know, but even more trusted than media, lawyers, and politicians. No, I think they're probably significantly
way above that.
Way above that being the lowest bar and then much higher than that.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah, that, absolutely.
Scott, it's just a pleasure to visit with you. You've got this magnificent perspective on leadership. I could talk to you all day about it. I have to let you go because you're running a 24 hospital system with, I think of notes, the 25th hospital being the hospital at home, I've heard from your team, but just a magnificent system, a magnificent what Adventist does. And congratulations on a great, great leadership career. And thank you so much for joining the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I actually love visiting with you on some of these subjects. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you, Scott. Thank you for the invitation.